The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Beyond and hello, welcome once again to Podcast Beyond. I am Max Scoville, filling in for Jonathan Dornbush, who is taking a lovely seasonal gingerbread making class through Masterclass. So please tweet him photos of your favorite gingerbread houses. Joining me once again, Brian Altano.
I love gingerbread houses.
Lucy O'Brien.
Me too.
And Tom Marks.
Can't we do Thanksgiving first?
It takes time. You gotta get the permits and make sure that they're safe and up to code.
You guys don't make a Thanksgiving turkey home.
Out of mashed potatoes.
You're gonna go find the close encounters of the aliens. Yeah. If you could possibly guess from that intro that had nothing to do with anything, this is a PlayStation podcast where we talk about Sony PlayStation and all the games playable on that lovely, sometimes weirdly shaped system. As we're kind of hurtling into Thanksgiving week here in America, it's kind of a weird, spotty, slow news week. Obviously, the big sort of thing that's happening is a lot of people are jumping on Black Friday stuff, but a lot of people are also taking vacations. So we get sort of little tidbits of news. One big running thing we've been talking about a lot is how hard it is to get a hold of a PS5. And we have some pretty hard info about why that's the case, which I think a lot of us guessed, which is because of robots. So Business Insider spoke to a UK-based group called Crep Chief Notify, which has been using basically like homemade codes and bots and algorithms and stuff. And they have collectively purchased, this is a 12-member group. They've collectively purchased close to 2,472 PlayStation 5 units in recent weeks, plus just under 1,000 when pre-orders first opened in September. So 12 dudes have almost 3,500 PlayStation 5s, which is maybe why they're hard to find them.
Crep Chief Notify, am I right?
I'll say.
Yeah, this sucks. This totally sucks.
No, it's so, Brian, I kind of want to pick your brain on this because you are kind of big into buying sneakers. And this is kind of a thing that kind of people see this with trying to, scoop up new Nikes whenever they do that, those drops and stuff. What's your experience trying to track down shoes when this kind of happens?
Well, what usually happens is what's interesting here is that when you buy Nikes through, say you want a new pair of shoes, right? Like, Your options are you go through the sneaker app, you go to a retail store and you camp out in line like the olden days, or you immediately buy from a secondhand market like on a website called StockX or something like that, or eBay. StockX does a little bit better of a job of verifying purchases. But basically, everyone is at the last minute with a 10-minute warning from the sneakers app. You can basically say, these are the shoes I want. And you have to buy them directly through there. They have your credit card information. From there, a variety of spectacular failures usually ensue. Maybe you get lucky. And so people have created bots which will spam these apps with hundreds of like sort of dupe and dummy accounts and do everything they can to buy them directly from this app because an app can't wait in line or a bot can't wait in line at a store. And in 2020, you probably can't either. And so everyone is now funneled into this one option. And then within seconds, those shoes, when acquired, are flipped and resold on StockX. and no one's the wiser, basically. So the secondhand market is flooded with people who are affluent enough to not want to deal with any of the headache garbage. And so they just go, I'm just going to go directly to StockX or eBay and buy the thing here. So where a lot of people were like, you know, they see time as money. They don't want to refresh websites all day long and try to get a PS5. So they go directly to eBay or some secondhand thing and they buy them from there, which then obviously feeds this sort of circular addiction of bots flipping and vice versa, cutting you, the consumer, out of getting anything. What makes things more difficult on this side is that most of the PS5s are not sold directly through PlayStation. They're sold through third-party vendors like GameStop and through Walmart. GameStop is circumventing this by basically making it so you can only buy bundles. It's almost incredibly difficult to get just a PS5 from GameStop. You have to get a PS5 that comes with a backpack and a hat and socks and all this other horseshit you don't really need.
Is that just to try to piss off scalpers if they're like, no one's going to want to rebuy a backpack? Like, is it
that's probably, honestly, it's partly that, and it's also for GameStop to relieve themselves of inventory of stuff that they wouldn't be able to move on a normal basis, thus keeping their company in business. Now, most of these things don't really have some sort of like walled off nature of making it so that there is a limit in what you can buy. If you go directly through PlayStation, meaning you got one of those like codes in the mail from them or that like invite, then you're kind of limited to what they allow you to get, which is usually one or two systems, right? Same with like the Microsoft Store when you try to get a Series X. But there's traditionally nothing really from stopping you from buying 6 units on Amazon of each SKU, 6 on Walmart, 6 on Best Buy, 10 from Costco, blah, 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 blah. So theoretically, one credit card, assuming you give your credit card company a heads up, can purchase 20 PS5s to one address. Set up a bunch of different credit cards or multiple addresses, PO boxes and stuff like that. You got 6 or 7 roommates. All of a sudden you've daisy chained dozens and dozens of people working together to create a giant wall of PlayStation 5s, all of which get sold in the secondhand market. I've tweeted about the PS5 a ton using the PS5 hashtag. Just anecdotally, every time I've done that, scalpers have come into my mentions being like, I got PS5s for sale. And I'm always like, unless you're selling those things at retail costs, you can F off. Cause like, I don't want people scalping shit in my mentions. Like, go do your dirty work somewhere else. And so we've been covering this. People have been selling these systems for $2,000 or more on eBay. And they're not just putting them there. They're actually selling.
I think we checked it and it's sort of, in terms of what's actually sold, it's kind of topped off at like 1500.
Yep.
Which is, oh, you know, just a measly like 3 times the retail price.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal.
And Sony put out a quote just yesterday saying, we have sold every PS5. There is no like secret inventory. We don't recommend ever launching a console highly sought after during a global pandemic ever again. Like they're gone. So right now your only option is to buy them through either secondhand, people who are like, I'm tired of this PS5, I'm trading it into GameStop, which is not happening, or scalpers. And this absolutely sucks because this is not a situation where, you know, there will be some flickering throughout the holidays. Like there might be a little bit of inventory burst over the next few days for Black Friday and stuff like that. But for the most part, if you want a PS5, you're going to have to pay a scalper between now and when the inevitable restocks are. So this is this sucks.
Willy Wonka golden ticket bullshit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's awful. It's so sad. I mean, it's not surprising cause of the pandemic and because we're so restricted, but it just sucks.
Yeah, I think that the strictly digital side of it is really infuriating because like you can obviously, I'm sure, rig up like a code to try to, you know, reserve in-person PS5s, but even then you're limited to like, oh, I have to go to like, how many are there physically in my local store? How can I do curbside pickup? Am I willing to drive to all the local Best Buys and Walmarts? But when everything is sort of existing in this sort of, you know, on the e-commerce side of things, this would happen, which this sucks. This is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I guess theoretically you could set up like CAPTCHAs and stuff like that. Like there's methods in play to do. I mean, if you try to change your, you know, password on a website somewhere, there's usually all these like hoops you have to jump through. You would think that there would be something like that. But like I said, because the retail market is so scattered with so many different companies. Like, we had a coworker who we're on a Slack channel at IGN called, it's like Next Gen Hardware, Console Pre-orders, or something like that, where we all kind of try to help each other out to be like, they're in stock here, go over here, they're in stock here. And friend of the show, John Borba, who's produced the show before, got a console at Kohl's, a store I didn't know was still in business, you know? Wow, this is like if you got a PS5 from TJ Maxx, you know, and like a jar of San Francisco 49ers Jelly Bellies from 6 years ago. Like, this, it's chaos right now. Like,
With that said, I'm really curious, if you are in a relatively COVID-free country, so shout out to New Zealand and Australia, kia ora.
All right, we get it.
Please let us know if you are also struggling to find a PS5, because, you know, there are more options to actually walk into a store.
Right.
Yeah, I'd really love to hear from you guys.
Yeah, that's interesting. That actually could be, I'm not sure how, I assume the console is completely region free, right? Like, could you hypothetically ask a friend abroad to try to get you one? The thing is, they sold out. They launched in the UK just the other day, sold out instantly. Same deals happening over there, scalpers and everything. So,
I mean, the games are still region locked, like, which is still
I know you'd have to like switch out the plugs, you'd have to get like a different
out the plugs. I don't know if you'd be able to, I don't know what it is in terms of the, I presume it's the same with the discs, is that like they're different. There's PAL and then there's the NCC. Blah blah.
That's such a weird. That's a whole weird thing.
Blu-rays are region free. I don't know. I haven't used like
sometimes
physical
media
in a long time.
It's a whole thing. It is
worth repeating, and I feel like I say this often, but maybe this will help to those of you who haven't heard it yet. But you don't really need this console yet. I know you want it, and it's been a terrible year, and you maybe have the money for it, but you can wait. Like, the hardware is kind of having a lot of issues right now across both platforms, and the games are mostly on your PS4. But I know you want it. I get it. Like, it's awesome. I basically worked outside all day waiting for my delivery guy to show up from Amazon. Like, it's, you know, I didn't believe it was real until I had it in my hands. But that's not how, you know, the impulsive nodes of the human brain work.
Like, yeah. Anyway, there's Matt Kim did a great write up sort of about the parallels between, you know, sneaker culture and the consoles going up. I remember going into this thinking like, yeah, there's probably going to be scarcity, but like, you know, there was scarcity for the Wii when that came out. And I just remember it being like kind of like a fun treasure hunt almost, or like my wife had to like call a bunch of like targets to track down a PSVR when she got me one for Christmas. And that was like, there's something almost, you know, there's sort of a thrill to it. It's still a pain in the ass, but at the very least there's like a challenge as opposed to an impossibility. And in this case, it's just, if you've got dudes who are cheating, like, that's it. There's just some guys have cheat codes and they're just hoarding PS5.
Yeah, no, 2020 has completely removed the element of like asking the stock guy, can you check the back? Do you have, are you sure you don't have one in the back? Yeah. Like, the back was the mysterious, you know, endless vortex where there was always your perfect pair of shoes and the t-shirt they didn't have on the show floor and next gen consoles. But all that's gone this year because of the pandemic. So everything has been online. And that means our only option is to fight robots.
Yeah, I think really just putting a captcha on there might have been a good opportunity, you know, just do the thing where, which of these are street signs? Please click on the horse. Like, which is prove you are a human being? Just the basic.
I like the idea of like the Terminators running out with the machine guns and they're stepping on skulls and somebody puts up a captcha and they're like, oh no, what can we do?
So anyway, in other news.
Traffic lights.
We got some news about Hitman 3, which is probably 2021's first big game that is coming out on January 20th. Square Enix put up a big trailer for that, which is showing off the new location, which is Chongqing in China, which has tons of neon lighting, which is great because the next gen versions of this game have gorgeous lighting and reflections and water and animations and lots more NPCs on display who you can, you know, creep around and, I don't know, strangle with a garrote wire or whatever. And it's going to be 4K, 60 frames a second, HDR on the new consoles, which is cool. And they're also going to give this Hitman 1 and 2 the same big next-gen coat of paint, which is pretty cool. So, I don't know. That's a nice thing to look forward to. Are any of you guys looking forward to Hitman 3? Is that on your radar?
It definitely is. The funny thing to me is thinking back about like when this Hitman was first discussed and first announced, and there was this whole big, like, I don't want to call it a controversy, but it was all like this mess of like, is it episodic? And people were like, it's not episodic. And the developers were like, it's definitely not episodic. We're just releasing it in episodes. And people were like, wait, what's going on? Like, and that was like this huge, weird thing. And now, like, years and years later, it's like they're kind of similar, doing similar things with it, but also it's like not really a big deal anymore. And they've proven that they can, this model is like actually really engaging and really interesting, and they're doing it well, and they're supporting the old games to kind of make them all one big package. And it's just kind of like, it's really impressive to see what they've done with this iteration of Hitman and continue to do with it into next gen.
Is this the first Hitman since they got bought by WB, or was that two?
I think that they went independent right after two.
So they kind of pulled a Bungie there, which is cool. I don't know. Right. Like, I'm happy to see them doing this, because again, they've been that first game got totally slept on because it was coming out in bits and pieces, and people would sort of be like, oh, it's great, and then they'd forget about it, and then another one would come out, and they'd be like, oh, it's great, and then they put out eventually the whole collected version. People were like, this game rules, but it was completely like, I don't know. A lot of people just kind of were like, I'll get around to it, and I think the Giant Bomb guys were like kind of banging that drum a whole bunch, being like, please pay attention to this game.
Yeah, but it wasn't until two that people really sort of like, when it was, again, it was like a whole package and you could play the entire first game in it, that was like, oh, this is really enticing.
Yeah, and it seems like they're kind of doing this, continuing this with three, which is really, I guess, kind of more of like a 3.0 than just a three.
Right. I'm kind of excited for this, because I feel like this is the window where I kind of get out of my comfort zone when it comes to like new consoles. Are always when I play a bunch of stuff that like I wouldn't have played in the last year, you know, like racing games, and like Hitman's been around for a long time and I've dabbled in it here and there. But I was like weirdly itching for like a kind of stealth game on my PS5 the other day. And I was thinking like, what can I really play? Like there's stealth segments in Miles, but for the most part, it's, you know.
I'm the same, Altano. And also, I kind of want to jump in because I'm very excited for this Project 007.
Yes.
Which is what, you know, IO is doing next.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we talked about this in the show, but if you missed it, they released a teaser for Project 007, which is going to be a James Bond game, origin story, totally not based on any particular movie, but that team knows what they're doing in that sense.
Yeah,
I just want to play a good James Bond game. You know, it's been a second. I remember there was one, like, Tristan Ogilvie from the Australian team reviewed one, and apparently he said in this game that Tristan was reviewing, it was so bad. He said, the name's James Bond. And it's like, that's not the line. Like, that is 101. Babies know that.
May you have the force around you at all the times.
I will return from being back.
But yeah, so this is I don't know. I'm kind of on the same page with this, but also I think because there is so much sort of Hitman 1 and 2 kicked in, I don't know if they're going to include all that or what the deal is there, but I think this is based on how these games are. A buddy of mine got super into them, and they give you basically a bunch of different weird ways you can try to complete a level, or like weird kind of almost sort of VR mission type approaches where it's like, do the whole thing, but make sure the person dies in the sauna or whatever. And you have to, you know, you have to figure out how to like screw up the sauna so it cooks a person instead of makes them relax or whatever. And I love that level of kind of imagination rather than just, you know, sneak around and kill people in a conventional sense. So looking forward to that. In other 2021 news, we also got a reveal for Neo: The World Ends With You, which is coming to in 2021 for PS4 and Nintendo Switch. And this is the sequel to the 2007 Nintendo DS game that was eventually ported to iOS and Switch, which is sort of a action RPG set in Shibuya. It's got like a very distinct kind of aesthetic, which looks sort of between Persona 5 and Jet Set Radio. Do any of you have any experience with The World Ends With You?
Yeah, I played The World Ends With You. I loved it. Before I played Persona 5, that was kind of like the, you know, the Tokyo experience game, because it was it really was beautifully reflective of that city in a really stylish way. And then obviously Persona 5 came around and that sort of added to that. So I'm really this. I mean, it's eccentric and extremely Japanese in all the best ways. And again, just when we can't leave the country, this is the kind of place I want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, do you have any experience with this? You occasionally dabble in.
All I remember about the two main things that I remember, because I didn't play the re-releases of The World Ends With You, is just it's such a stylish game, super, super stylish. And I remember one of its big things when it first came out on DS was it being super hard unintuitive initially, because you were controlling two characters at the same time, one on the top screen with the buttons and then one on the bottom screen with the touchpad. And it was like you really had to split your brain in the middle of fights. And that was like super interesting. So I'm interested to see what they do with it. And obviously they had to, you know, deal with this with ports to systems that didn't have two screens. But like, I'm interested to see what they do with a sequel because they can't really use that mechanic as like a core mechanic. So like, how does this game evolve is really, really interesting to me.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I remember hearing about this a bunch, but I was kind of surprised that it's as old of a game as it is. I legitimately thought this came out in like 2012 or something, but I guess that was one of the ports.
Well, the DS and the 3DS generations really blend together in my brain, at least, right?
Same.
Those were two distinct consoles that had very distinct libraries to a certain extent. Obviously, DS games played on 3DS, but like it made that whole huge window kind of just like feel like one generation in a weird way.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I guess I'm excited to see what it looks like running on, you know, new hardware, because it does have like a very, you know, distinct style to it. And it's just, I don't know, there's so many games that were kind of like, you know, hamstrung by the limited resolution of the DS and 3DS. And I remember people like, you know, dumping 3DS games on emulators and you're like, oh, whoa, that's actually very pretty when you're looking at it on something, you know, bigger than a TI-83 screen. Speaking of screens, this is a little tidbit of news for a very specific section of people. We got a statement from Sony over the PS5 supporting variable refresh rates in the future, which it doesn't currently. I think it's kind of the same group of people who are outraged that it didn't support 1440p resolution, which is that weird middle between 2K and 4K. But variable refresh rates is like how fast the monitor changes. Brian, you recently got a new TV, and we were sort of texting about refresh rates.
Yeah. So this is something variable refresh rates basically means, and I'm not Digital Foundry, so I will screw this up and then you can clip it out and throw it back at me and ruin my holidays. But no, I think that this is great news. This is something that some Xbox games do, but something that Microsoft's been working on for a while. Basically, it means instead of like capping or locking your refresh rate in at a specific number, it will your PS5 will adapt to the feed it is ingesting and spit that back out onto your television, assuming your television can do that. I have the LG CX LED, which Lucy, I believe you have as well.
I do.
So that one's capable of it, and I imagine that's going to be a feature we're going to see going forward. In fact, that's like a lot more important. I was looking at like the PS5 box the other day that says 8K on it. Like it's just a useless number to put on your PS5. Like that, this actually, I think more people, especially with Black Friday and stuff coming around, more people looking to get new TVs for next gen will end up with televisions that support this feature before we end up with televisions that support 8K. So this is really cool. It gets a little wonky at times because there's like some handshaking that happens between your console and the game and the television. And I noticed with like Call of Duty on Xbox, I think it needed a patch for it to work perfectly. But yeah, when it all gets working together, it's one of those things that it's really, really gorgeous. And I'm really excited to see more games support it, because it's part of that sort of like next gen oomph, I think, that people are looking for on these big new TV sets. By the way, if you are looking for a new TV, I highly recommend that one. It is phenomenal.
It's so good. And by the way, the 55 inch is big enough, let me tell you.
I wish I'd listened to you.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly bring that up because that's like, again, yeah, people are, you know, getting new TVs and stuff, but there's always the conversation about, you know, frame rate and resolution. But this is like that kind of other variable that doesn't necessarily come into play as much. I think you mm-hmm. see it more with, you know, gaming monitors. But Yeah, I mean, again, it has to be a kind of weird three-way handshake between, like, does the software support it and does the display support it? But, like, the good news is down the road, the PS5 will at least support it. So that's, you know, one more moving part that's moving. And also, Sony said something about something, which is always good to acknowledge.
Yeah, no, I think this is good future proofing on their behalf. And I'm happy to see the consoles do this because they're going to be here for a while. And so, you know, I think that, like, knowing that there's a sort of like a trajectory for them to grow along with displays, like, we're at the point now where, like, these LG CX TVs, I believe, like, the 55 inch is like $1,300 or something.
Yeah, it keep an eye on it because it drops in price occasionally. Yeah. Like, I had a sort of a like an alert set for when it drops in price, and it's just, yeah, it's good to have because it does do that. It's not.
Yeah, I believe
that if you can set up a bot to just snipe it when it's at the lowest price, really just try to get like four or five of them and you can sell them on Craigslist. No big deal.
Get a couple of PS5s and buy them some shoes while you're there too.
Yeah, so speaking of looking at things on displays that looks cool, last week, I guess a physical copy of Cyberpunk 2077 found its way out in the wild and a couple of rascals got a hold of it and decided to stream some gameplay and chuckled a whole bunch over it. And of course, CD Projekt Red was quick to yank that down, but even quicker to put up an official clip of Cyberpunk running on both PlayStation 4 Pro and PlayStation 5. And that is probably more exciting to look at with your own eyes than it is to hear us discuss it. But yeah, it's out there. It looks nice on both of them. I'm excited to play this game. One person who has played this game is here with us right now. Tom Marks, you played 16 hours of Cyberpunk 2077.
I did. And I came out the other side harrowed and tired and just, I needed a lot of naps. But it was, I bet. It was a good time.
Tom, look, we've already had a lot of questions fielded at you. But yeah. I haven't paid attention to all of them. Cool. So I'm just going to ask you.
Well, for the record, we do have, if people are curious in hearing in-depth, kind of like more curated thoughts, we put out a conversation with me and Ryan talking about the game because Ryan already played 4 hours. We also put out a full video preview. And then also I took questions from YouTube and Twitter from our audience and answered 11 of the kind of most popular ones. So all those videos are out on IGN and YouTube if you're hungry for Cyberpunk. But yes, Lucy, you've ignored all of that. Lay it on me.
Okay. So, you know, we kicked off this podcast talking about how many people haven't been able to get their hands on a PS5. What did you play on? Was it just, I presume it was PC. B, looking at that footage now that you've actually, like the PS4 footage, now that you've actually played the game, does it feel like it's a game that is absolutely made for next gen and that the footage that you looked at on YouTube, does that look kind of less than what you experienced?
Okay, so I played on this weird chimera of a setup, which was just kind of a you know, the reality of doing game demos in 2020 during a pandemic, which was the game was running on a PC, but it was running on a PC in a like CDPR office somewhere else. And I was playing it on my PC with a controller over a streaming service called Parsec, which is basically like game streaming, like, you know, how you might see it other places. So basically, I was taking control of somebody of a different gaming PC running it. And that PC, for people who care, had an RTX 3080 in it, GPU. So it was a very strong PC.
It's basically like a Stadia X Cloud situation, but like similar. Rock solid. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Similar and you know, not meant for mass production. It's meant for hooking one specific computer up to another specific computer. As for the, like, I don't know. I watched the PS4 footage and it didn't, like, I was surprised by how good it looks, right? Like, I think it obviously there's places where it looked lesser than of just by necessity. That makes sense to me. But I was surprised by how much sort of like the parts of what I played that impressed me, like lighting effects and like obviously facial animations, like the talking is still going to be the same, stuff like that. That all still looked really good to me in this footage. I don't think, you know, obviously this is a very curated presentation, they're showing us what they want to show us, right, in a very specific way, and that's their prerogative. Obviously they want to make the game look good, So we don't know how it's going to be with bugs, with overall performance, if they're only showing us the best little spots that run well. Like, those questions we still don't know. On PC, on a strong PC, it ran great, but obviously the PC that was running it was next gen equivalent, right? So it should run great there. It's a tricky question.
I wonder if the differences we're going to see are going to be in stuff like draw distance and loading right. times and stuff, and obviously some textures here and there. It was interesting that they showed us PS4 Pro and PS5 footage today, but PS5 we still haven't seen it
compatible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. PS5 via backwards compatibility. So,
yeah.
That's, but no base like launch model PS4.
Like, the two things I'm most curious about are, like, what does this look like running on a launch model PS4, and what is the actual proper next gen PS5 version look like? And we've kind of got these two sort of middle of the road versions. I mean, again, yeah, it's super quadruple A, 8.5 years in the making, middle of the road, but I just mean it's not the low end, and it's not the high end.
Right.
So what I'll say is, probably on base PS4, not great is going to be the answer, right? Like, it's going to look worse than what it was on PS4, what they showed for PS4 Pro. And at least the next gen upgrade, like, we haven't seen the PS5 upgrade that's supposedly coming next year, but like, I did see the game running on basically the highest settings with RTX on, right? And that looked really pretty amazing when I did that on PC. So like, the next gen version, I imagine, is going to look similar to that, and it looked really pretty amazing.
Weren't they touting the fact that there's no load screens in the main game once you're in there?
Yeah,
it's kind of like a Red Dead type of thing.
I didn't see, the only time I ever saw load screens was when I like had to reload a save, which will happen frequently because it's quick save often. That's all I'll say. It's a tricky game. You'll die a lot in combat if you're not being careful. And then also fast traveling. But the funny thing about fast traveling was, like, I really loved, because Night City is like pretty dense, right? Like, it's a big, big map. It's just not like what you'd think of as like RPG insanely massive. They're not trying to like outdo The Witcher here in terms of just sheer like distance,
which they've been public about.
But because it's condensed, because everything's closer together, I actually found myself fast traveling a lot less than I thought I was going to, because like, you can just drive somewhere in about the same time it would take to load screen to get there. So like, why would you sit through a load screen when you can spend a little bit more time but have fun driving? And so like, that was one part I really, really liked, was that seamlessness is very cool.
How is the driving?
It's fine. This is one of the questions I got in that Burning Questions video we made, was like, it's not, you know, Gran Turismo, and it's not trying to be, it shouldn't be compared to that, but I thought it was smooth enough. I thought it was fun, and I was driving, the car interiors are really beautiful, but I don't like driving in first person in cars, and you're doing a lot of turns and going around a lot of other cars. So like, I was in third person most of the time in cars. And then once I unlocked a motorcycle that I could call on command, I was only driving the motorcycle, because the motorcycle I could drive in first person without running into things. And I could also like weave in and out of things. And I could also get really dumb, where like, I could just be like, see a waypoint pointing me to like a market, and I could just be like, well, I'm gonna just drive up those stairs then, because I'm on a motorcycle and it doesn't matter. So motorcycles, I think, are going to be probably some people's vehicle of choice in this game.
So that's appropriate. It's a very cyberpunk way of getting around.
Tom, I have a question. I did read your preview, which is really good. Please
would you just read it right now? Like,
no, I read the preview.
Be quiet for
it's a great preview. Yeah. You covered a lot of ground, so please check out that preview if you haven't already. It's a great write-up. But Tom, I'm really curious, you know, how The Witcher 3, I adored. It's one of the best games of the generation, et cetera, et cetera. We all know this. But I did find the combat slightly clunky, which I don't think I'm alone in that. It's a more or less common opinion. Tom, how is the combat in Cyberpunk?
The combat was like, it's tricky because something just to say, 16 hours is like a small amount of this game. Like, that's right. The vibe I got was that it took me 6 hours to reach the title card of the game. And then it took me,
insane.
Yeah. And it took me probably 7 or 8 total until I really was like at a point in it where I was like, okay, I understand what the structure of this game is. I understand what I'm doing. I understand what the loop is. And now I have the freedom to just do whatever I want and play the game. Mm-hmm. I'd say the combat was probably the thing that impressed me the least about the game. It was a little underwhelming at first. Guns, enemies are very bullet spongy in my experience. It was very disappointing to walk up to someone and get, you know, multiple close range headshots and they're like still standing is like a very weird sort of feeling for what is ostensibly a first person shooter. But one of the things that I was noticing, and this is why I'm hesitant to just not be like, this is going to be the weak part, just like The Witcher, is like, as I was getting deeper into the game, I was unlocking things that were making combat more interesting. So at some point I unlocked this ability where if I dodged, where previously I was only using dodge in melee combat, if I dodged while aiming down sights, time would slow for a few seconds. And that was like really, really cool and made combat way more interesting. I found a gun that could shoot through walls. So at a certain point, my strategy literally just became using a hack to get everybody's position and you could see holograms and then just going into another room and just like shooting wall hack, like shooting the holograms of people and never even entering the room where I was fighting them. Like, so there was there, as I've got deeper in, there were more options that felt more varied and felt more interesting that kind of made combat fun in a way that like smoothed over sort of the clunkier FPS elements of it, I think.
I mean, I think if you approach it like an FPS, you're going to be sort of disappointed unless you sure. like level everything up. But it like clearly they're cribbing a bit from Deus Ex, which was always, yeah, you do have a gun in first person, but the whole idea is that you can also stealth or hack or talk your way around a situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you find a lot of any situations where, you know, like did it feel like wide enough that you could sort of circumvent just a straight on shootout?
Totally. I did one mission, a main story mission where you have to kind of, no spoilers, but you have to go through this basically enemy base. And it's like four stories of enemies that you're sort of like methodically clearing out. And I didn't draw my gun the entire time. I killed everyone in the base entirely through stealth. And it was awesome, right? Like it was really empowering to be able to do that. I think there's also, this game does a really smart thing that I think some stealth games or games that allow stealth get wrong, which is encounters are discreet in situations like that. So that if you screw up stealth and you go loud and everything goes to hell and you're shooting people and it's just an action game, then in the next encounter, it'll like the stealth resets, right? You can then have an opportunity. Those guys didn't hear all the gunfire, I guess, right? Like that part's a little weird, but at least then you have an opportunity where it's like, if you screw up in the first floor of a base, you're not just like locked into action the entire time. You can retreat, you can hide, you can figure your stuff out and like regroup and keep playing the way you want to play, which I really, really appreciated. This game definitely has a ton of options. Like my character went super into the body stat, which is like the physical stat. And it meant I couldn't unlock doors through hacking. And I was like, really, or not many doors, right? Like, cause it required a higher hacking stat. And then at a certain point I was realizing that like certain doors I couldn't unlock through hacking, like computer controlled doors, but other doors that were just like locked with a locking key, I could literally rip open. So like that's okay. The options you get, right, is it's literally depending on the stats you go into, you get different paths, very literally different paths that you can or cannot go through and become accessible to you. And I was really into all that choice, and that's so, again, why like the like shortcomings of shooting and combat sort of felt balanced out by just like, well, I can just do the thing that seems fun to me then.
So not only does this feel like a big sort of dense, long, very long game if you just stick to playing one style with one sort of archetype, but you could essentially re-roll and play as somebody new and level up entire different skill trees, and it'll be a fairly varied experience, right?
Yeah, I think the way you play will be pretty different. One thing I did emphasize is like each life path, there are three life paths you can choose. I don't think each life path is a different game, you know? It's not that kind of depth. Or that variation, but it definitely was like I chose the corpo life path. And like every time I was talking to like corporation people, I had a little free dialogue option for me from the corpo life path that was basically like, hey, my character comes from this world. I know how to talk to these people. I know how to get through these conversations without a huge issue, where if I didn't have that, probably I'd be fighting those people. Right. Mm. And instead I was befriending them. And that's very different. I don't think that'll affect like, you know, fundamentally how you play the game, but it will really, really alter things in the moment. And that was really cool. Like I really, really loved the amount of choice and variation that this game has.
I mean, this is a massive, dense game that's going to take quite a while to complete, let alone see all the side stuff, but it's also a game that's meant to be replayed. Like they've totally, they've been pretty transparent about that. I mean, and I'm so excited. One thing I've been really curious about, and I think a lot of people have sort of noted this, is that there's this very like kind of just kind of aggro, like tough, like cool guy sort of attitude and all the stuff we've seen. Like it's obviously very like gritty and, you know, badass. And like I've always loved like the sillier side quests in The Witcher and the sense of humor. Did you encounter any of the sort of the, I guess, any levity in the margins?
Definitely levity. And I won't spoil anything because obviously people should experience that for themselves. This game Cyberpunk is surprisingly good at balancing out its over the topness. It does rely on like crass, you know, smut a lot of the time to like make its jokes or like get.
I love some crass smut.
I do love filth.
I'm just gonna be real clear here. A lot of this game, there was that tweet that was circulating like in the last couple weeks that's like what feels like porn but isn't porn. Cyberpunk 2077 feels like porn but isn't porn. Like it is, there's sex everywhere in this game. Like that's just kind of in the DNA of it. And that can be like sort of, if you're not like into that sort of thing, it can be a little in your face at times. But at the same time, I was happy to see that this game has moments for more human interactions, more genuine conversations, stuff that it doesn't have to be just like action and over the top and all that stuff all the time. I enjoyed a lot of that stuff, right? Like they do all that relatively well, at least from what I saw in my limited time. But like there's also space for silliness that I saw. There's also space for like really kind of like calm human moments where you're just like having deep conversations with people that I really appreciated, which I could get into, but I'm not going to because I think that gets to spoilers.
You're being appropriately vague here. I like it.
One side quest specifically that I'll call out without talking about the specifics of, if that makes sense, but it doesn't, but it doesn't matter. I'm moving on. Is there was this series of side missions where you have to, there's this AI taxi company in the game. It's a taxi service run entirely by an AI system called Delamain. And at one point, you're tasked with going out and finding these rogue taxis that he has lost, that Delamain has lost contact with, and finding them. And each one of those is essentially just a gag, right? Like it's basically just these little find this taxi around the city, and then like something very dumb and silly happens around it. And those are very, very fun and cute. And I don't think I've found anything that's like, you know, huge big gags, but there's definitely those moments of humor.
Yeah, it's not like it's not Saints Row, but like, I mean, even The Witcher had like a part where you're chasing a goat around with a bell. Like there's always like there's little silly kind of fairy tale encounters.
I really like hearing that though, because I mean, just by nature of its subject matter, it was kind of at the risk. If it was in the wrong hands, it could have been a bit edgelordy. You know what I mean?
I think it maybe drifts into that at times, but not like to an egregious level. Like this is a really good way of explaining it in my mind. JR, our friend and colleague, asked me, basically he was like, does it feel like that stuff, like the smut, for better lack of a better word, does it feel like it was written by 15-year-olds sort of just going ha ha boobs and laughing? And like, absolutely not. It does not feel like
that's that. A bummer, because I find that to be some of the funniest. That's some of the best stuff in the world, personally. I would play an entire game that looked, that had that polish, but just had a bunch of people go,
from my perspective, I'm pretty glad that it's not like that. But yeah, it's
I'm gonna have to return my copy back to Kohl's. This is
um, Yeah, looking at the at the art book they put out, I think this summer, which was probably aligned with one of the release dates they didn't meet. There's a lot more, like, it's got all these sort of, you know, concept art. It's got sort of in-game advertisements, and there's a lot more Idiocracy and WALL-E than I was expecting. Like, because they've clearly gone very heavy in the marketing on, like, oh yeah, here's your Ghost in the Shell, here's your Blade Runner, here's your Akira. Like, here's, this is the very much like, you know, here's your Total Recall, but it's also got the taxi from Total Recall. You know, like, it's got a little bit of the humor to go along with the kind of cool stylized future. As for the smut, I mean, obviously I kind of like that because I'm a foul person, but also, I don't know, if you took somebody from like the 1960s and you brought them to like now, they would, you know, you'd take them into H&M and they'd blush. They'd be like, oh, mercy, look at all these camisoles. It's right. Like, oh, this, and like, everyone's, look at how people are dressed.
And to that end, that's why it definitely, all that stuff didn't like, wasn't bad to me. It wasn't off-putting to me.
It felt in place.
What I saw, it just felt like part of the universe. And to that end, your kind of home neighborhood where you start out is like a dingy, bad neighborhood where that stuff is very prevalent. And if you go to other neighborhoods, it's way less prevalent at times, especially in like the fancier area of Night City, right? You're going to see a lot less of that sort of stuff because that's just not the neighborhood where that stuff is supposed to shine and is popular, right? So like, some of this is just a matter of like, I only got to play the first 16 hours of the game and this is what I saw, right? And I want to be really clear, not a complaint, just like, something to note is that this is like probably, as weird as this sounds, the most adult video game I have ever seen in the truest sense. Like, if the hot coffee mod, if the people who are mad about the hot coffee mod when that hit could play this game, their head would explode, right?
Like, so not adult equals artful and not for children, but adult as in, I mean, like, this should have like an, yeah, like this is like R18 kind of thing.
That yes, but like both also, right, too. Like it really does have like, it's some heavy topics. It's some heavy stuff. I don't want to spoil anything with the story, but like,
all right,
man,
well, this is
into the story.
This is enough smut from you, Tom Marks. I'd like to talk about something a little more family friendly. You also reviewed Sackboy: A Big Adventure. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Wow, what a pivot. This
wow, I got whiplash from that one.
This is Christ.
You went from like Thong Song to Raffi on the dance floor.
Yeah. I mean, Sackboy: A Big Adventure could definitely be read a number of ways. So
that is true. That's true.
Yeah, I reviewed this. I was gonna review it last week, and then somebody was like, "Hey, you want to play 16 hours of Cyberpunk?" And I went, "Yeah, okay, that can wait." So
how dare you?
Yeah, no, I really, really enjoyed this. If anybody is enjoying Astrobot or Astro's Playroom, 100% check out Sackboy, because it's such a good little platformer, and it's super adorable and fun and charming in a similar way, minus the rampant PlayStation references, basically.
In fact, it is on our list of the best 10 PS5... Let me rephrase that. The 10 best games you can play on your PS5 right now.
The 10 only games on PS5.
No, because we did include some last-gen games in there that have had some, you know, bells and whistles attached to them.
10 games that are, in fact, playable on PlayStation 5.
Hey, the Xbox One was much harder.
I can imagine. The top 7 days of the week.
Oh, boy. So you liked it. You gave that an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. Sackboy is really fun. It's a shame that the game doesn't have online co-op yet, but actually this is something fun. We tried it with SharePlay. Me and Jonathan played some with the PS5 SharePlay feature.
That would have been so adorable. You two boys playing that game together.
I want to see that. I don't know that you're both such gentle souls. I wanted you to play the little bag boy game. Watch.
I threw him off a cliff like 4 times.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect that.
Brian has experience with that, playing New Super Mario Bros. With me.
Oh my God. Yeah. I missed that. I really miss that. No, I love this game, man. I might dive into it this week and just try to 100% it. Cause I had such a good time with Astro's Playroom that I'm kind of itching for that again before I go get my ass kicked in Demon's Souls some more.
Yeah, the music in this game is amazing.
Yeah.
The original stuff, and then also they have these music levels that like use very specific licensed tracks, but then also they'll incorporate recognizable songs into remixes and orchestral score like versions. So you'll be playing like a water level, and then you'll be like listening to the melody of this very lovely orchestra song and be like, wait, is that Madonna's Material Girl?
Okay, I'm total thing that makes me want to play this. Like,
same, that's me. That's me in, fully in.
That also feels Cisco's like, The Thong Song? Shout out to Cisco. He listens to the show.
Hey, Cisco.
That's two Cisco references now.
Yeah, I'm trying to beat Cole's this time.
All right.
I guess now there's one's ahead. Damn it.
Anyway, I think that's what excited me, because I feel like that's having remixed orchestral versions of familiar pop songs is sort of a nice way of all the sort of fan-made stuff that would be an homage in Little Big Planet. You know, people are always making things that were familiar, and it's like that's kind of a cool way of doing that without having to throw in a whole user created content thing there.
Yeah.
And if you're still here, we actually are going to talk about the secret stuff, the fun things, the good stuff. Let's talk about some games. We're all playing games right now. That's the most exciting thing in the world.
So many games.
Yeah. So let's see. We, Lucy, should we talk about our problem?
Oh my God. Let's talk about it. I have an addiction, and it is to Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I feel like I was a little dismissive of it last episode. I feel like I was like, you know, it's kind of a meat and potatoes Assassin's Creed game. It's kind of, I think I compared it to McDonald's, which in retrospect, I think I was a little harsh.
Well, here's what it says in the run of show. It says Lucy and Max are dirty little pigs who love hogging around in Ass Creed Valhalla's big bucket of slops. And then you went into the doc and left a comment that said, I just came here to say this. So we're on the same page there. Where, like, it's a good game, but it's a familiar game. I think that's really all it is, you know?
Honestly, this is what I needed to hear, because I was in the same boat with you guys. I lost the number of vehicles and the pig and the ass and the Creed and the rustling around with the truffles or whatever you said. But the I was kind of like, this is all very good stuff. It's a bunch of good systems making a good game that for some odd reason isn't totally grabbing me. And this is what I needed to hear to like fire it back up and get back out there.
I'm 30 hours in and it's still delighting me. Yes, damn. It is familiar, but it's like just wandering around in that world, you just discover so many little delights and everything kind of feels like a little delight. It doesn't feel like something, it doesn't feel like, oh, this is the eighth time I've discovered something just like this. It's like, this is new and interesting and cared for. This particular character, someone really gave a shit about this one-off character and his quest to find a truffle pig or whatever. Like, it's like, it's so considered. Its world is considered, its characters are considered, and it's really eccentric, which I really like. It's got a weird kind of sensibility to it where it just feels like the devs were having a lot of fun making it. And that really comes across when you're just exploring its world.
It obviously takes a lot of cues from The Witcher 3, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think we all look at The Witcher 3 as having this big, you know, dramatic sweeping story, but then there'll also be like random townspeople who make like Pulp Fiction references. And you're like, that's awfully silly. And like Ass Creed totally has stuff like that in there. I saw, there was a tweet that somebody was like, I can't solve this puzzle. And it was like a list they found in a house that was just a bunch of random items. And it was, I was like, what is that? And they were like, maybe someone can help you get to the crux of the matter. And everyone's like, ha. And I was like, oh, it's the Horcruxes from Harry Potter. That's stupid.
Did you like it? Did you see the NPC that has just a hatchet stuck in his head?
Yeah, I got him. He's great. Yeah.
And he's like, I my head hurts. I think I bumped it. Do you see anything? And you're like, oh God, man, are you?
Yeah. Right? No, it's great. Like, there's all these little moments, these little vignettes, and they're just called like mysteries in the world. And I appreciate it because they're not full on dedicated side quests, and they're not just like randomly generated fetch quests, and they're not full story beats. They're just like weird little just moments in the world, which is really fun to go kind of sort of respond to your curiosity and go over the next hill and see what's going on over there. Brian, you've been playing a bunch of stuff. Tell us about all that stuff.
I got my first PS5 platinum for Astro's Playroom, which was a absolute delight. I've talked about the game on the show before. You guys have too. That game it's really, really, really smart in the way it brings together so much PlayStation history. And I was thinking about this, and I'll probably catch some shit for this, but I love all of the parts of Smash Brothers that aren't necessarily like the part where all the people are beating each other up. Like if you had taken all the charm and the wrapping paper and the bells and whistles around Smash Brothers, which is the back end of that game, is this gigantic museum dedicated to Nintendo. It is this celebration of unlocking capsule toys full of, you know, collectibles and statues and little trinkets celebrating the history. This game, Astro's Playroom, does that for PlayStation. Mm-hmm. In a victory lap that I believe is like so well deserved from them that they don't nearly get to pat themselves on the back on for it as often as Nintendo does. And it's wrapped in this brilliant and incredibly charming and tight and smart and fun platformer, which is one of my favorite genres. Like this ended up being probably one of my favorite 3D platformers of the last few years. Easily in my top 10 games of the year. I went and 100%ed it and beat every level, found every collectible, read every little thing about it. There's all these wonderful Easter eggs in the big museum room area, which I won't spoil, but you collect hardware from throughout PlayStation, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's very self-referential about, you know, the stuff that really was awesome and the stuff that was kind of like, huh, who is this for? But if you like hit the power buttons on those things and like jump on the reset buttons and stuff like that, you start unlocking trophies. There's all these little like Easter eggs and stuff. I use the trophy guide for this because there's just completely weird, obtuse stuff you have to do to get all the trophies, but it gives you a really good excuse to kind of go back in the levels and putz around and look at all the fun little things they have, hidden for you to do.
Did you use that the card thing where it takes you to like the next trophy objective or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, the activity cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which it was my first time really digging into that feature. But yeah, the music in this game is phenomenal.
So like good.
The SSD song has like been stuck in my head.
And the GPU song. I didn't realize, you know, I've been a PlayStation fan since the original and had them all. And like, it was just so amazing to see. It sounds so stupid and fanboyish, but like just seeing the consoles rendered so beautifully up, those old consoles, yeah. And remembering how they felt to turn on and remembering how they felt to put a, you know, just clicking on that PlayStation, original PlayStation button.
I think that was one of the most exciting things, which is weirdly just so cyclical. But when I got the first PS1 and I'm just, yeah, holding it up and just like wiggling my controller around and then pushing the button to open it. And it was just like, that looks exactly, it's like photorealistic. Like they,
exactly.
And it's so cool that we're like, we're here now, you know?
Yeah.
There's this like model viewer mode too, where you can basically just go in and rotate and look at all these toys that you've unlocked. Man, yeah, it's just so great. It's such a fantastic use of the DualSense. It is such a beautiful, like, I think it's the closest thing they've come to making Smash Brothers aside from PlayStation All-Stars, obviously, which I'm trying not to think about. But
yeah, but Brian, what if that, but then the PlayStation Eye camera and the PlayStation 2 controller adapter had to fight each other also?
That would be it.
Yeah.
PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. I think we got something. It's just hardware wars.
I want this game to grow. I want it to get new DLC. I will pay for it. I want this team to make a full on $60, $70 platformer that takes 20 hours to beat. Like this is a fantastic formula. I think what they did on PSVR was amazing. But that was, you know, PSVR exclusive. So just a small amount of people played it. This comes with your PS5. Do not ignore it.
Don't sleep on it. I've said that to a bunch of people, but I think it looks like, you know, pack in demoware stuff, but it's so good. I wish they would do like DLC levels or a full game or whatever that's just greatest hits of like classic PlayStation game levels, but reimagined as Astro Boy levels.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they made like a I don't know, a Yharnam level, but it's all cute. That would be, I would lose my mind for that. Tom, what are you playing?
So many things. I had to create a sticky note on my desktop to keep track of all the games I want to play right now. It's ridiculous. My first weekend with the PlayStation 5, I platinumed Bugsnax, which was very fun and silly. I also started and beat Spider-Man Remastered in a single day because I'd only ever gotten like maybe two thirds of the way through that game.
Oh, it's going to say like, had you played it before?
Right. And so I wanted to I put out a Twitter poll asking if I should finish it, and I didn't want to wait for the save file transfer. So I just played the entire thing. which was very fun. And now I'm ready for Miles Morales, but burned out on Spider-Man, so I haven't started Miles Morales yet. But I'm going to do that probably this weekend, this long weekend. I just have been playing so much stuff. I'm still playing like Hades. I'm still playing Yakuza. I started Assassin's Creed and I'm enjoying it. But every time I want to play Assassin's Creed again, I'm also like, but I love Yakuza. So
okay. This is the first time this has ever happened to my recollection, but somebody on the show is playing Yakuza that I'm not.
Yeah. And it's not on PlayStation.
Yeah. Which is kind of rustles my jimmies, but I might just start it up in Xbox and hope I get a hold of a Series X at some point. But what's your vibe on it? Like, does it feel significantly different from the other Yakuza games, or is it sort of the same thing, but just turn-based?
So I played Yakuza 0 on your recommendation, but I only got a few hours into it before life got crazy and I kind of fell off. And so I'm fresh to the Yakuza series.
Okay. And makes sense.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's like, as far as I understand it, it's like a new character in a new city and it's in kind of a different time period ish. So like, it's very removed story wise and I love the main character and I'm enjoying the combat enough and it's very silly and dumb and fun. And like, I'm just enjoying it a lot right now. It makes me want to go back and play Yakuza 0 and continue playing Yakuza 0 because I don't know. It's just super cool. I'm just really enjoying it.
Yeah. I need to play that. I need to get into that game.
And then also a real quick shout out. I just started last night, 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, which is a game that we have a few people on staff, like Mitchell and Matt, are really, really into the story. Like, I think this is one of the best stories of the year.
I think Rid, our producer, is really into that as well. Shout out to you, Rid.
Yeah. And this is a game that I'm like, it's so Japanese right now. Like, it's kind of like the very first thing, and I don't say that derogatorily, it's just the very first thing that happens is that you watch a like Japanese high schooler lift up her skirt slightly, and then that summons her into a giant robot where she's suddenly naked, and then she's having a conversation with someone where she's like, wait, are you from the future also like that other guy, and you haven't met that other guy yet? And like, this is the first moment of the game and I'm like, what's going on?
Rid, I take back my shout out, you big perv.
No, it seems really cool. It's just, you can't judge a story-driven kind of visual novel-ish game like this off the first hour. So I'm excited to keep going in it.
Brian, you're playing some Ghost Runner?
Yeah, that game kicks ass. Have you guys messed with that?
Yeah, I just started that last night. That game is F-word bonkers.
Yeah. It's a nice little sort of appetizer plate before Cyberpunk, if you want a little bit of Cyberpunk, but just without all the RPG stuff really getting in the way. It's just
That feels like Mirror's Edge Hotline Miami, basically.
Absolutely. That's the best way of putting it. Yeah, I don't think I can say anything better than that. It's fast as hell. It is twitchy, arcadey, ultra stylish, and a little repetitive at times, but like very, 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 very rewarding when you pull stuff off.
I wish it was like 3% easier.
Yeah.
Like, I wish it was just the tiniest little like tweak of the dial down, you know.
It pushes. I was just doing like all the like the speed run stuff in Astro's Playroom, so I think I came into it with a good mind state, but I could totally see that. I think if it pushed back just a little bit less, it would click with people just a little bit more. It does kick your butt a little bit, but when you pull stuff off, it feels awesome.
It also just doesn't have load times when you die, which is nice. I don't know if that's a PS5 thing or just a thing in general, but it's like press triangle to respawn. It's just that. It's which is very nice. But that game is
yeah, that game rules.
Yeah, that's like a cup of coffee on your TV. Speaking of shooters and stuff, I think last week I talked about how I played a little bit of Call of Duty and I wasn't super impressed with it. And I found out it's because I was playing the PlayStation 4 version,
which you suspected.
I guess that, but I went and checked and sure enough, that's the case. And so I went ahead and downloaded the 100 gigs of PS5 version and started it up, and it is awesome. It is really cool. So, yeah, I jumped into multiplayer, which I'm usually really bad at. And then I think maybe enough people are just, I guess, also bad at on a Tuesday morning or whatever, but I did really well. And the whole haptic feedback thing really makes you just excited to shoot a person in the face. And it's just all the guns, just all sorts of great vibrations. And they really went nuts with the haptics on that. So I'm pretty stoked on that. And, yeah, it's pretty rad. So games, man.
Yeah, it's like, it is such a great couple of months for good games. Like, the whole year, we are so spoiled. Awesome. Yeah, totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Like, man, we could have used some of this last year.
Right.
It's crazy to me that I could play an hour of The Pathless as well and be like, this game is beautiful and I want to keep playing it. Oh, no. And just look at like slow pan to this mountain of things I've also started an hour of recently. And just like,
dude, quick shout out to Austin Wintory and team for the music in that game. My God. Like I saw those videos of him just like conducting an entire orchestra. Like I make instrumental music albums and I'm like, this is hard. And I see what that guy does just on another level. It's just incredible, incredible stuff. Yeah, the music in The Pathless is awesome. I still need to play more of it. I played about the first 2 hours and I really dig it. It's like a hyper minimalist Zelda, but with on cocaine. Like it's just nonstop. Like the sort of velocity in that game of like moving and just stringing together arrow shots and solving puzzles. It's crazy. It's super, super cool.
Yeah.
So much goddamn shit.
Right? And then we got the cyberpunk and then the other stuff that's coming. Good Lord.
And then Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is going to come down the chimney, bring us more toys to play with. Good heavens. Anyway, this is fun. I'm glad we all got to sit here and talk about games. If you want to catch up with us or send us a picture of a turkey or whatever, you can do that. I don't know. That'd be kind of weird. Anyway, I'm on Twitter, Max Scoville. Brian is Agent Bizzle. Lucy is Luce O'Brien. And Tom is Tom R. Marks. And please remember, send a nice picture of a gingerbread house to Jonathan Dornbush for motivation as he is fully engulfed in his masterclass about how to build the most structurally sound, environmentally friendly gingerbread house in time for the holidays.
And if you can, please, no captions or anything, no context.
Don't let him in.
Just the photo
Just the photo.
Pure motivational support. It's just J.M. Dornbush to send him lots of pictures of gingerbread houses. Don't do that little wink and the nod. We're like, oh, the guy said hello or sent us to send the gingerbread houses. Just do it. No comment. That's
also, if you are making your Thanksgiving turkey house this weekend, remember they are mostly flightless birds and they can't get too high up. So try not to put the windows too high for them. And also, you know, no wall art on the interiors that's too high for them to change.
And if you're scared of the Thanksgiving fox trying to sneak into the turkey house, make sure you put in a nice gravy moat.
That is very true.
That's the end of the PlayStation show, everybody. Thank you for listening or watching and have a wonderful rest of time until the next episode of this show. Goodbye.
Beyond.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.